The headlines: U.S. missiles kill at least 10 people in Pakistan's tribal belt region. The U.S. Senate approves the most sweeping overhaul of Wall Street rules. Dr. Iranian academic Shahram Amiri talks about his ordeal at the hands of CIA agents. When Israel demolishes more Palestinian homes in the occupied West Bank.
Hello, welcome to Press TV's World News, coming to you from our international headquarters right here in Tehran.
Many thanks for joining us. A U.S. drone attack has killed at least 10 people and injured several others in northwestern Pakistan. A drone apparently fired three missiles at a house in the Datakhel area of North Waziristan. The house, which was allegedly used by militants, was completely destroyed. Hundreds of people, most of them civilians, have been killed in similar U.S. attacks in the region during the past year. Washington claims those strikes target militants, but Islamabad has repeatedly condemned the attacks, saying they violate Pakistan's sovereignty.
Well, from a U.S. drone attack in Pakistan to the U.S. Senate, which has approved the broadest overhaul of financial rules since the Great Depression of the 1930s. The 2,300-page legislation was approved by 60 to 39 votes. The bill is designed to rein in risky big bank practices blamed for the 2008 global economic meltdown. It rewrites the rules for covert financial transactions, as well as day-to-day dealings on home mortgages, student loans, and credit cards. Senate Democratic Leader Harry Reid has said President Obama will sign the bill into law next week. Now, the approval of the bill has been seen as the second legislative triumph this year for Obama. We're going to switch over to Washington. I'd like to thank him for joining us. Executive Director of Oppenheimer & Company, Roland Amort, thank you so much. So how significant is this legislation, and what are the main changes that we may be seeing?
Okay, yeah, in terms of the significance, this is probably a much more politically significant document than it is one intended for regulation. And the reason for that is we haven't even gotten the results back from the commission that's studying the financial breakdown that occurred several years ago. What this law intends to do is to regulate on four fronts: the banks, the investors, consumers, and government. All four of them have significant pieces of this legislation, but I guess the best way to sum it up is one that it increases legislative oversight over financial institutions, very much so.
Now, what does it mean as far as the day-to-day dealings now with student loans? In my story, I mentioned about some of the changes and how it's going to affect home mortgages and student loans and credit cards. Let's talk about the consumer from the consumer perspective now. What kind of changes would the average American likely see due to this legislation?
Okay, yeah. What's established in this legislation is a consumer protection agency that's going to be overseen by the U.S. Federal Reserve. All right, and I think the target of that is going to be looking at financial institutions' transactions with consumers, such as their debit cards, the fees they charge, loan fees, etc. And so it's really a consumer aim towards the financial institutions and their dealings with the public.
Now let's look at it from the financial banks, for example, and these type of entities. What does it mean exactly for the financial sector, this legislation?
Okay, well, you know, the financial sector, let's take a look at the banks. What mainly is going to happen to the banks is they're going to gain a little more oversight, number one. Number two, a lot of their trading activities, their derivative activities, that's a normal part of their business, is going to be restricted. What they're going to have to do is get rid of those trading, or at least some of their trading operations, to bring them into what we call the Volcker Rule, which is a minimum that they can have. In addition, to that. Their feet will be held closer to the fire in terms of their capital requirements and the monitoring of such. So basically, the banks are going to be far more restricted than they were before. But we're seeing the effect of that now. Banks haven't lent money in the last 2 years because of fear of this kind of a regulation. So this just codifies what's been happening all along.
And looking from the political perspective, how significant is this victory for U.S. President Obama before the upcoming elections in the fall? How do you see it?
Well, you know, it's interesting you say that. I was reading today an informal poll shows that 4 out of 5 Americans just don't have a lot of confidence in this legislation or in this bill. What we have seen over the last 18 months is confidence in the administration from the presidential branch all the way up to Congress has been eroding terrifically with the radical policies that are being implemented. What was intended to be a political victory may very well be a political liability in the short run, at least up through November. So I don't
why,
think
why do you say that? Why do you think it's a political liability?
Oh, well, when 4 out of 5 respondents do not trust the bill or its intentions, I think that by definition is a political liability. I mean, certainly the administration would have hoped that 4 out of 5 were in favor or pro the bill.
So why do you think it passed by it was 60 votes to 39? If it is seen as so much as a political liability, then why do you think that it has passed with those numbers?
Well, you know, you have to realize it passed at the bare minimum. One vote swing the other way, it would not have passed. Healthcare passed with the same exact vote. And you've got to look at that. And healthcare has become a real liability for this administration at this point. Not to suggest that it will remain as such. I don't know the future. But the 39 or the really a 60-40 is what the split is. But there was one senator that hasn't been replaced is the bare minimum. Virtually only 3 Republicans voted for it. And the rest did not. 37 Republican senators did not vote for this legislation.
Okay, something we'll definitely be keeping our eyes on to see the results. Thank you so much for being with us. Executive Director Oppenheimer and Company, Roland Amore from Washington.
Well, investors lose confidence in U.S. stocks amid fears of cooling economy and slower than expected economic recovery. Dow Jones Industrial Average dropped more than 100 points early in the trading session on Thursday. Both Dow and Nasdaq closed in negative territories. News about the passage of a major financial overhaul bill by the U.S. Senate has also contributed to the sharp decline. Investors are worried that the bill will hurt the already vulnerable banking system. So far this month, the market has been hit hard with multiple bad news, including lousy jobless reports and a decline in manufacturing orders. Investors fear that the economic recovery may be stalling.
And now to Iran, where 2 bomb blasts in the southeastern city of Zahedan have killed over 20 people and injured more than 100 others. The blast hit outside the city's Grand Mosque, and the explosions have also damaged nearby shops. Emergency teams have been sent to the scene to take the injured to the hospital.
The first blast did not cause a lot of casualties, but people had gathered before the second blast. When it hit, I was thrown back.
One of Zahedan's members of parliament says only 3 or 4 people were killed in the first explosion. It says agents affiliated with Rigi terrorist group, also known as Jandallah, carried out the attack. Iranian scientist Shahram Amiri, who had been abducted by CIA agents, is back home. Gisu Ahmedi has more.
A sight for sore eyes. Shahram Amiri's emotional reunion with his family brought together a crowd of reporters in Tehran's Imam Khomeini Airport who wanted to know more about his 14-month ordeal and how he had been kidnapped. Grateful for the trust of the Iranian government that never believed U.S. claims that he had defected, the 32-year-old researcher, who had been portrayed by the U.S. as a nuclear scientist as part of a psychological warfare against Iran, told his story.
و با یک هواپیمای نظامی منو از کشور عربستان سعودی به خاک آمریکا منتقل کردن. و در طی دو ماه اولی که من در واقع خاک کشور آمریکا بودم، تحت شدیدترین شکنجه‌های روحی و فشارهای روانی از طرف گروه‌های بازجویی سازمان اطلاعات مرکزی آمریکا CIA قرار گرفتم.
He said that he had also turned down a $50 million bribe for cooperating with the U.S. while he criticized Hillary Clinton's comments.
Mr. Amiri has been in the United States of his own free will.
من مدارکی دارم که نشون میده که من در اون کشور آزاد نبودم و اجازه تماس با هیچ کس رو نداشتم و تحت کنترل افراد مسلح سازمان اطلاعات مرکزی آمریکا بودم.
His family couldn't be happier to have him back.
This was God's blessing on this occasion, and I'm very grateful that he's back.
But while analysts continue to comment on the story and review his three YouTube videos and news that had been released, and the U.S. in a series of contradicting claims from denying the very fact that he was in the States to announcing that he was there on his own free will, still insisting that he had accepted a bribe, back home, Iranian officials seem to be preparing to stand up for Amiri.
We will defend his rights and file a complaint. Such acts are unprecedented and unacceptable.
Iran reserves the right to further pursue the matter. We will let you know how this will be done when the initial studies of the documents are over.
The abduction of the Iranian scientist has raised many questions. And now that Mr. Amiri is back, he will be able to shed light on some new dimensions of this case. Kisum Shahmadi, Press TV, Tehran.
It's 2:42 a.m. right here in Tehran. Let's give you a reminder of this hour's top stories. U.S. missiles kill at least 10 people in Pakistan's tribal belt region. The U.S. Senate approves the most sweeping overhaul of Wall Street rules, as we've been discussing. Abducted Iranian academic Shahram Amiri talks about his ordeal at the hands of CIA agents.
در واقع خاک عرب کشور آمریکا بودم، تحت شدیدترین شکنجه‌های روحی و فشارهای روانی از طرف گروه‌های بازجویی سازمان اطلاعات مرکزی آمریکا CIA قرار گرفتم.
Israel demolishes more Palestinian homes in the occupied West Bank.
And stay with us right here at Press TV. The Arab League boosts ties with Syria. Stay with us for that story and a whole lot more coming up. It's 2:44 in the morning right here at Press TV's international headquarters in Tehran. You're watching the second half of this World News Bulletin. The Israeli military has demolished two more Palestinian homes in the occupied West Bank. Witnesses say two families were ordered to leave their homes at dawn before they were destroyed. Now, the families say they did not have enough time to evacuate their homes. An Israeli military spokesman says the houses were built without permits. Israel has destroyed more than a dozen Palestinian homes in the occupied West Bank so far this year. Israeli house demolitions in East Jerusalem, Al-Quds, and the West Bank have drawn international condemnation. They've also hampered peace talks between Israel and the Palestinian Authority. Well, meanwhile, Arab League Secretary General Amr Moussa has arrived in Damascus to meet with Syrian President Bashar al-Assad.
Mazia, the two sides discussed regional issues, including Israel's nuclear potential. You'll watch more in this report.
Syrian President Bashar al-Assad held talks with Arab League Secretary General Amr Moussa. The two sides discussed the importance of collective efforts to successfully finalize the Arab draft decision concerning the Israeli nuclear potentials and submit it to the 54th General Conference of the International Agency for Atomic Energy next September. The meeting also referred to the Arab Neighborhood Policy Initiative, which was proposed during the recent Arab summit in Sirte in Libya. They also discussed the situation in occupied Palestine, especially breaking the siege on Gaza. Mr. Moussa affirmed the need to force Israel to join the non-proliferation nuclear treaty.
Israel has not joined the non-proliferation nuclear treaty. There is a consensus today that the Middle East region should be free of weapons of mass destruction. And if Israel is considered an exception, that will not be achieved.
Mr. Moussa briefed Hamas political leader on the developments of the Palestinian situation, especially the issue of Palestinian reconciliation talks. He also stressed the importance of Palestinian unity.
Hamas is very keen on overcoming obstacles to achieve reconciliation as soon as possible. We are ready for that, and we hope that all parties respond.
Mr. Amru Musa's talks with Hamas came a few weeks after tensions between Egypt and Hamas, in addition to Egypt's pressure on Hamas to agree on the Egyptian point of view. Mr. Amru Musa did not offer anything new for the reconciliation talks between Hamas and Fatah. His talks with Syrian officials regarding the Arab draft decision on the Israeli nuclear potentials was the only update, though. Muhammad Ali, Press TV, Damascus.
After four long years, the foreign ministers of nuclear neighbors India and Pakistan held talks on Thursday.
The meeting, Arash, which was held in Islamabad, aimed to improve ties between the arch rivals following the 2008 Mumbai attacks. We have more for you.
Indian Foreign Minister S.M. Krishna arrived in Islamabad with a 15-member delegation to help kickstart talks with Pakistan to pave way for a sustained dialogue. The visit comes in the backdrop of a fresh wave of unrest in Indian-held Kashmir and fresh allegations levelled by the Indian Home Secretary that Pakistan's premier spy agency, the ISI, had planned and executed the Mumbai attacks.
The press statement of the Indian Home Secretary on the eve of this dialogue. Tell me to what extent that helped. It has been reported in all the papers of Pakistan today. And I think we discussed it, and we are both of the opinion it was uncalled for.
If it could help to unravel the conspiracy, and if it could help in trying to go after the perpetrators of the Mumbai attack, perhaps that could be the biggest confidence-building measure that could be taken.
Terrorism being exported out of Pakistan has always remained the top concern for India, whereas Pakistan has always maintained that the resolution of the Kashmir conflict is crucial for sustainable peace between the two neighbours. Crucially, this meeting, however, covered a wide range of issues which will contribute to restoring trust and building confidence in bilateral relations.
We will extract hope, even from hopelessness, because the spirit is to move on and to move forward.
I would like a prosperous Pakistan. I would like a stable, democratic Pakistan. I would like good neighborly relationship with Pakistan. And all these factors will go a long way in helping the larger constituency of this region.
Analysts widely believe that Western powers have been cajoling both India and Pakistan to get back to the negotiating table. Stability between the neighbors and overall peace in the region are critical for the outcome of the endgame being prepared for Afghanistan by the United States and its allies.
The foreign minister level talks between India and Pakistan were described by both sides as being cordial and positive, with the Indian foreign minister inviting his Pakistani counterpart over for the next round of talks in India. What was revealed, however, in this press conference following the talks was that those talks will not be taking place anytime in 2010. Adil Sabir for Press TV in the capital, Islamabad.
That brings us to the end of another edition of the International News here on Press TV. Like always, allthews.presstv.ir is where you need to log on to get your